This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's 5 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. A festival of festivals today. Stick with me. You're going to find out where there will be a festival near you, whether that's in Victoria, South Australia, New South Wales, elsewhere, when they happen and what's going on. We're talking to a whole bunch of festival people today here on the show. It is our own little festival of festivals. Myself off, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking cravings here on Joy 94.9. Thank you, Matthew Thompson, for the news and for sitting in the news studio giggling at me when I make one little error for the day. That's very kind of you. Thanks also to Mark and Bob for the return of Techno Gaze, an interesting program today, and I'm sure that the remainder of the summer grid will be filled with all things techno from the boys. Thank you to both of them. A very interesting program indeed. And thanks also to Lindsay for spending a couple of hours with me on Saturday Magazine this morning. And so now I'm back to talk food and beverage, and well, it's that time of the week where we have a bit of a discussion, and there are so many festivals going on. The Melbourne Food and Wine Festival obviously kicks off in March. There are a number of festivals happening in right around Australia. So today we're going to be speaking to the festival director of the Noosa Food and Wine Festival on in May, and hopefully we'll be presenting a program to you, a live program from Noosa for Cravings in May. And so we'll speak to Jim Barado, he's the festival director, about halfway through the show. We're also going to speak to Chris Gervin-Brown. He's a Western Australian man who's the driving force behind Melbourne's first gourmet barbecue festival. That festival is here as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, sits underneath the festival. We'll speak to Chris as well about all things gourmet barbecue, I would guess. Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, as I mentioned, 1st to the 17th of March, happening right here in Melbourne. We'll talk a little closer to that. And in April, the Orange Food Week is presented in regional New South Wales. It's about an hour or so out of Sydney. A really, really good festival if you want to get up and experience the best of what regional New South Wales has to offer. We'll speak to the president of the Orange Food Week in a little while as well. Also happening in a couple of weeks' time is Festival in Launceston. Now, it's not it's never high on my list to visit Launceston, but this festival is fantastic. Runs for 3 days, 8 to the 10th of February, and is the best of Launceston's food and wine, well, Tasmania's food and wine, really. So that's all coming up on the program. I'm looking forward to you joining me on this program as we have a look at these festivals. But first of all, we're going to kick off with just a little bit of music. This is from a new band. This is a very new CD to the Joy catalogue. This track is called Heartbreak, and it's from a mob called Airs and Graces. I hope you enjoy it.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Cravings here on Joy 94.9, the day before the big kickoff to the Midsummer Festival. I would like to hear from you and know what you're putting in your picnic basket that you take tomorrow. You can SMS 0427 Joy 949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 Joy 949 or send a tweet to cravings_Joy 949. You may even be considering taking a barbecue, which is a nice introduction to my first guest today. He is Chris Girvan-Brown, and he is the driving force behind the inaugural Gourmet Barbecue Festival that rolls into Melbourne this March as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. I believe he's lounging about somewhere in WA. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Well, I'll say good morning because it is technically good morning in WA.
It's morning for us, yes.
Yes, it's afternoon over here. Chris, tell us about this very first Gourmet Barbecue Festival. What's it consist of? How long does it run?
It runs over 3 days, the first weekend in March, so March 1, 2 and 3.
Yep.
With the main events on the actual weekend, the 2nd and 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we are looking at all forms of barbecue. And in particular, we will be running barbecue competitions.
For people to win a barbecue or for people to show their skills?
Well, there will be probably competitions for people to win a barbecue, but this is for people to show their skills. And it's a massive sport in the US. Here in Australia, we haven't started down that competition road yet. So this is our very first look at that kind of thing. But interestingly, as opposed to the way they run it in the US, we have two different forms. We have what the US would call barbecue.
Yes.
And we have what they would call grilling.
Grill. Mm.
And most of what Australians understand as barbecue, the US actually calls grilling. So barbecue for them in the US is a slow-cooked, smoked meat over many, many, many hours.
And is that, does that often involve a pit?
Yes, they call it a barbecue pit. That's right. Yeah, we call it a barbecue, but they call it a barbecue pit. And they come in a number of different forms.
Mm-hmm.
They can be run on, a lot of them actually, are run on firewood.
Right.
Or wood pellets.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it's a completely different kind of barbecue, something that's
so it's not throwing a snag on the flat grill that's powered by a bit of gas in your backyard.
No, very, very different to that. They use the poorer kind of cuts, so things like brisket and pork shoulder and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they slow cook over, you know, 18, 20 hours.
So Chris, not unlike a Polynesian-style hangi or something similar that's
Yeah, those are also done over a length of hours.
Yep.
This is a slightly different process. They cook at a really low temperature on a fire that's just tickling away, kind of 95, 100 degrees Celsius,
mm-hmm.
and just let the smoke, very faint smoke, just sort of caress the meat.
Oh,
over a long period of time.
It's a very romantic description of cooking a lump of meat. So the competitions, so we've got the Pitmaster Pro, the Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off, and Family Fun Barbecue Competitions.
That's right. And the backyard and the family are more sort of grilling and, you know, what people would normally do in their backyards. The Pitmaster Pro end of it, those guys will be up all night, cooking right through the night to present their dishes at sort of 1 o'clock in the afternoon the next day.
Wow, this is incredible. I was intrigued to read about this. Now, we couldn't have a Pitmaster Pro competition without currently having the International Barbecue Pitmaster here as part of this little festival.
Yeah, yes, we have masterclasses. So I'm running a version of my barbecue school that I run here in Perth,
a
compressed version,
mm-hmm.
and then we have one of the US master barbecue chefs, a world champion, coming over to also run master classes for us.
Now, his name is Andy Groneman. Now, I've got to read this description because were it not serious, I would have giggled. He is a veteran in the international barbecue circuit. He's won hundreds of barbecue awards with his team Smoke on Wheels, including 20 grand championships. Champion in the chest-to-chest National Brisket Invitational, and has also won individual categories in the Jack Daniel's World Invitational and in 2010 and 2011. I had no idea that all of this even existed, Chris.
No, it's massive, and largely everything in the US is, but yeah, it's massive in the US. They have competitions every single weekend, sometimes two or three on a particular weekend, and 20, 30,000 people attend. Huge, absolutely enormous. But of course, like with baseball, you know, if they're having a competition in the US, it's the world champion.
Of course it is. Yeah, it's quite odd. Now, I was also not aware that we had our own Australian Barbecue Association.
Yes.
And you are its founding president and director. How quickly is this whole barbecue competition style of thing taking off in Australia?
It's really starting to get some serious momentum. I mean, the hardcore guys in the association have been, you know, interested for the past probably 5 or 6 years. It was about maybe 6 years ago that we started setting the association up. But now it's really starting to grab some momentum, and events like this just will boost it, you know, to the next level. Yeah.
And Chris,
we've got members all over the country.
And well, what sort of prize money? You talk about this stuff in the US with the you know, this man with his world champions and his chest to chest national brisket invitational, which I think is the funniest competition I've ever heard in my life. What sort of prize money is in it for these guys? Or do they win prizes? Do they win barbecues? It's
well, in the US, the prize money can be up to $30,000.
Wow.
So it's massive and it's hugely sponsored. I mean, like you were mentioning before, the Jack Daniel's Invitational, you know, is sponsored by Jack Daniel's, of course. Mm. And it's massive. It's absolutely enormous. And we're not at that point yet in Australia. But and ours will need to be different to theirs anyway, because our influences are different to theirs. We do a lot of fusion, a lot of Asian kind of influence in our barbecue style. So ours will be kind of different. But yeah, in the US it's absolutely enormous. And with the advent of these festivals, this being the first one in Melbourne, it's going to grow here as well into a sport. When you think about it, barbecue is already a hugely competitive sport. If you go to someone else's house for a barbecue, 2 weeks later, you invite them to your house for a barbecue, and your barbecue has to be better than the one they put on.
It's almost a bit like a pissing contest, isn't it? Where, you know,
exactly.
mine's bigger than yours, sort of thing. I'm speaking with Chris Gervin-Brown.
Right.
He is the driving force. He's the founding president and director and head chef of Urban Grill. And he's the driving force behind Melbourne's very first gourmet barbecue festival, which is here as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival in 2013. I just want to talk about the association in Australia. Obviously, there are many of us who think that we're quite handy with a pair of tongs. How can we get involved with these competitions and actually make the association bigger?
I guess the first thing is go along to the festival and you'll be able to see a whole pile of different options and things that will interest you. But you can register to compete, and even if you're just competing at the sort of backyard level or the, you know, take your kids along and do the like a snag burner kind of level, there's a couple of those kinds of levels, and just get a bit of a taste for it and have some fun. At the same time, you can pick up some info on the association if you want to go that little bit further, or on the barbecue forum if you want to do that. There's a whole pile of information out there. If people are interested, I guess the easiest bet is to email me, info@urbangriller.com,
yep.
And I'll send them back a little pack which will give them the link to the website for the festivals. It'll give them the link to the Australian Barbecue Forum and the info on the association as well.
Now, you mentioned that there are going to be some masterclasses and a rare opportunity to take part in some masterclasses with Andy Groneman, who is the current reigning international barbecue pit master. If these guys are cooking for 18 hours and overnight, Are we going to have to give up a night's sleep to be part of these masterclasses?
No, Andy's class is a couple of hours long, and he will focus probably on the preparation for US competition-style barbecue, so brisket and ribs and that kind of thing.
Mm.
So he'll take you through the sorts of things that you need to prepare, and I'm assuming he will have started a cook the night before so that you can get a taste of the final product, but I can't confirm that yet.
Mm.
And my classes are a bit more your basic grilling styles. So we talk about the science of cooking, what happens at a cellular level when you brine and when you marinate, and the internal temperature that things are cooked at, and just what that whole science. And we try and apply that into more of a grilling style than the barbecue smoking style that Andy has.
Chris, this is, I must remark again, this is rather extraordinary. Chris Gervin-Brown is my guest. He's talking about the very first Melbourne Barbecue Festival that we'll have as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And I'm quite taken with this idea. We're quite known for putting, if I can coin a phrase, a shrimp on the barbecue. You know, I'm sure that every second person listening has thrown a chop or a snag onto an overheated grill in their backyard. Uh-huh. And yet you're talking about the quite exacting science of grilling and barbecue. What first sparked your interest in sort of making this all your new life?
Well, I come from a diploma of agricultural science kind of background,
mm-hmm.
and so that gave me a slightly unique perspective. And when I started to cook, I found cookbooks really difficult to follow. You know, that whole idea of cook for half an hour per pound, you know, on the third Thursday if it's a full moon, and you know,
and the meat's been harvested by virgins.
Mm. Yeah, that's, you know what I mean. They're written in this kind of language that doesn't make it clear what's going to happen. You know, if you follow the pattern, yes, you'll get a result, but my oven might be hotter than yours and, you know, the result's not going to be the same. So I started looking at the science, you know, what actually happens. And there's some interesting stuff in the science. For example, you know, at 66 degrees Celsius, the moisture inside of the cell expands to the point where the cell wall bursts. So now you have all the moisture in the meat running around inside of the meat. It's no longer contained. So right. If you cook the meat to underneath that point, so 62 degrees Celsius, which is medium, all the moisture in the meat stays inside the cellular structure. So you don't lose it. When you cut into it, you don't lose any on the plate. And too many people overcook, burst the cellular structure. When they cut into it, you get a big puddle of red stuff on the plate, and you know, at home, I'm not eating that, it's bleeding, and it gets sent back. So, understanding the science of what's happening helps you take control.
Chris, just one last question, because I know there are a number of regular listeners that are vegetarians. Can vegetarians still be involved in, you know, obviously not a brisket invitational, but certainly be involved in developing more knowledge around the barbecue and perhaps how some non-meat products?
Absolutely. The interesting thing with cooking vegetarian dishes on a barbecue is that you're dealing with cellulose and the breakdown of cellulose rather than the breakdown of proteins.
Yep.
And collagen. So, and they break down differently. So if I can just give people trying to barbecue vegetables a quick tip.
Yes.
Parboil first or steam first.
Okay.
So get that initial breakdown of the cellulose to start happening. And then when you put it on the barbecue, you're effectively only looking for a little bit of grill colour or plate colour and it to warm through. So it speeds up the barbecue and it gives you more control on that end. If you simply put like raw carrot, you know, sliced in half on a barbecue, it's guaranteed to burn. The sugars on the in the carrot will burn.
And it'll still be crisp on the inside.
That's exactly right.
Chris, it's been an intriguing conversation and one that I hope we get to have again. Chris Gervin-Brown, he is the driving force behind the very first Melbourne Gourmet Barbecue Festival here for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Peter. And if you'll pardon the pun, it's been a joy.
Thanks, mate. That's Chris Gervin-Brown. I'm absolutely intrigued by that entire discussion, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope you are too. It's going to be a very interesting little festival. It starts on Friday the 1st of March, finishes Sunday 3rd of March at 7 p.m. That's all happening at the South Beach Reserve on Beach Road, St Kilda. The website, you can go to allthews.bar-bforbobqforqueerfest.com.au. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9, where it is 27 minutes past 1.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed you are. It is 1:30 here on a Saturday afternoon, and a very interesting discussion about Melbourne's very first gourmet barbecue festival. And we move now to one of Tasmania's premier summer events, a three-day celebration designed to showcase the very best of Tasmanian food, wine, beer, arts and entertainment. It happens in Launceston's historic and picturesque city park. Joining us to talk about that is Lou Clark. Lou, good afternoon.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Talk us through this festival, because it's attracted over the years 35,000 people or more. And runs from the 8th to the 10th of Feb. Give us a bit of a précis of what people might enjoy.
Well, Festival has been running for 25 years, so we are celebrating 25 years this February, which is fantastic. And as you mentioned, it's held in City Park in Launceston, beautiful old park, wonderful gardens and trees. And people can come along and experience a diverse range of Tasmania's beautiful cool climate wines, boutique beers. We have fabulous food. And we roll that all up into 3 days with lots of entertainment ranging from bands through to buskers, stuff for kids, you name it. Come along to Festivali and you'll find something to enjoy.
Now, you mentioned Tasmania's wonderful cool climate wines. There's certainly the northeast of Tasmania producing some lovely sparklings as well as still wines. But you're very lucky in Tasmania to have extraordinary produce.
We do have extraordinary produce, and we've got some amazing well-established producers and certainly some fantastic up-and-coming producers. So food and wine events, I guess, are growing considerably in Tasmania. A lot of people would already know about the Taste Festival, which is held in Hobart around the time the yachts come in from the Sydney to Hobart yacht race.
Yes.
Festivali follows about 6 weeks later. So people can come along, they can try some wines, they can sample some fantastic produce, not just from the local Launceston Tamar Valley region, but right across the state.
And then, of course, we talk produce. There's no greater producer around Tasmania than Nick Haddo from Bruny Island Cheese, producing some extraordinary cheeses.
He does produce extraordinary cheeses, and he will be at Festivali.
Yeah, he's a bit of a rat bag as well, so you want to try and get hold of Nick. And you mentioned the Tamar Valley. That's sort of where I was alluding to before, with some of the lovely sparkling wines and those beautiful cold climate wines.
Yeah, we certainly, Launceston, I guess, is, you know, the gateway to the Tamar Valley, and we have some amazing wine producers along both sides of the river, and certainly we produce some wonderful sparkling. So when people do come to Festivali, you know, they can sample a whole range of those wines. Mm-hmm. We're also running a series of masterclasses over the Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
Predominantly, these are wine and beer tasting masterclasses.
Which is, there's nothing wrong with those. Let me give you that hint.
No, nothing wrong with those at all. With a little bit of cheese thrown in, Nick Haddo's actually doing a wine and cheese class with Joseph Cromie Wines.
That's worth a flight from Melbourne to Tasmania for, without question.
It is definitely. And Karina Danbergs from Clover Hill is
who
also
makes
doing
phenomenal sparkling.
Yes,
she's also a wine judge. She's a clever woman.
She is. She's a very clever woman, and she is doing a wonderful class on sparkling. So if you want to come and learn, not only about Tasmanian sparklings, but sparklings from other regions, it's definitely a class worth attending. And in relation to the masterclasses, there's another class I'll just touch on, which is a Pinot class with Dr. Andrew Peary.
Beautiful.
Andrew, you know, is a very well-known Tasmanian winemaker and has been making wine for a long time, and is acknowledged internationally as a fabulous winemaker for our state. So his class sold out in 2012, so I would expect it to sell out in 2013.
Well, as I mentioned, Lou, it's a very quick flight from Melbourne to Launceston and reasonably cheap if people want to come and make a weekend of it. So if they want more information, the website...
Yeah, the Festivali website is just festivali.com.au, and they can also book tickets to the event and to the masterclasses on the Launceston Travel and Information website, which is visitlauncestontamer.com.au.
Terrific. Lou, really grateful for your time today.
Excellent. Thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. That's Lou Clark. She is from Festivali in Launceston, a festival, a food and wine event, well worth visiting. We're going to have a little bit of music. This is a track called Little Talks from an Icelandic band called Of Monsters and Men. It's one of my favourites at the minute. We'll have a listen to this, and we'll be back very shortly with Jim Barado from the Noosa Food and Wine Festival here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 25 minutes to 2.
Joy 94.9.
That's Little Talks of Monsters and Men, a terrific track from an Icelandic band. We'll come back to that maybe a little later in the program, because on the line I have the director of the Noosa Food and Wine Festival. His name is Jim Barado, a man around, or a name around Noosa that you can't talk about Noosa's food culture without talking about. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you?
Oh, mate, great to talk to you, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Noosa Food and Wine Festival is very firmly established itself as one of Australia's premier food and wine festivals, probably along with Melbourne and certainly the Sydney International Food Festival, happening from May 16 to 19 this year. The festival it's celebrating 10 years this year and just continues to grow and grow.
It is. We're very excited. We had no idea that we'd be where we are when we first started this 10 years ago, but we're very, very excited about this year's program and what it's going to involve.
Now, we presented this very program from there in 2012, and we're looking forward to coming back and presenting another program live from Noosa. What's some of the things we can look forward to in this year's program?
Well, let me tell you about some new things, and one of which is a great big, we're going to kick off with an amazing an event, and it's called Edible Music. We've got the Queensland Virtuoso Orchestra, a full-on orchestra, with six of Australia's foremost musicians, people like Ian Cooper, Jane Rutter, Taryn Feiberg, Guy Noble orchestrating, conducting it, and featuring 10 of the top San Pellegrino chefs in the world. So we're bringing over 10 chefs for our 10th anniversary, and we're going to do this world first called Edible Music. So each of these guys will come out and orchestrate and do a cooking, theatrical cooking demonstration, if you will, too, in sync with an aria that they've been given. So
wow, that's
really, really fun.
It sounds incredible. I just want to run through some of those chefs that you're speaking of. Mark Best, who is obviously from Mark in Sydney. Yeah. Andre Chiang from Restaurant Andre in Singapore. Mauro Colagreco from Menton in France. Carlo Cracco from Ristorante Cracco. Peter Gilmore from Key in Sydney, David Kinch from Los Gatos, from Manresa in the USA.
That's right.
Yoshihiro Narisawa from Japan, Ben Shuri from here in Melbourne, David Thompson from Thailand, Australian boy known very well to this audience, and Tetsuya Wakuda. So this is one hell of a lineup.
It is, absolutely. I have to pinch myself and say, how are we going to do this? After you do something and you say, oh, my God, how are we going to do this? So when they all said yes, I was just, we were really, really overwhelmed. But look, they're all pros and they're really, really terrific guys. And what we do here is take them back to the root. So here we don't, and that's, it's been the point of difference of the Noosa Festival over the others, because the others have so many people through, and they're done in large auditoriums, large spaces like the Opera House or whatever. Here we try and do things, everything small, very friendly, so that we bring the chefs to the people, so they get to interact, and every one of the chefs that come in cook in some way. Either they cook the canopies and do dishes at degustations, and so they really relate to other chefs and the people who are here. So
there is a wonderful sort of camaraderie at the festival, a wonderful fellowship. I just at this year's festival sort of walked behind the tent, and there was Matt Preston sitting in the dirt with a couple of chefs, and they're all just munching on a bit of food from a stand and having a wow of a time.
Absolutely. One of the things that we learned 4 or 5 years ago here, that it's an interesting thing, because chefs unfortunately don't have any formal continuing education or whatever kind of thing. It's left to themselves, and they're always out there learning, experiencing, and trying things. And one of the things that we noticed, that a dynamic that was happening with even the world's best chefs when they come in, they're always interested in finding new produce, looking at new techniques. So you'll see them as they're at the stoves or at the prep things, always looking over their shoulders to see what others are doing and learning and doing all that sort of thing. So that's a good thing for us. We're really happy that we can help impart some knowledge even to the best in the world. So it's great to see that, and to expose them to some fantastic local Queensland and national produce.
And Jim, the people that come to the festival, some of the chefs that are involved, are really some of Australia's best. You know, Ella Wolf Tasker coming from Daylesford here in Victoria, Martin Boats from Longreen, Christine Manfield from Universal in Sydney. You know, David Pugh's up there, Matt Wilkins there from Melbourne, Kevin McCarthy, who's an incredible winemaker from down here in Victoria. I mean, it's just a remarkable lineup. What do you attribute the success of this festival to?
Well, I think it's again. I'll come back and be a little elitist here, but Noosa is one of those unique places in the world. First of all, it's had a food culture here for 35, 40 years, dating back to the two crazy Frenchmen who used to scale fish in the middle of Hastings Street for the Sarong. And it's had that culture, and it's kept it up and all that sort of thing. We've attracted some of the best local gentlemen farmers that have come up and do produce. So a lot of the produce in the surrounding areas produced by comes up here, but goes onto the tables of Sydney, Melbourne, and overseas. It really does some of the special things. And the fact, the proximity of Noosa, just 1 minute to Sea to Plate and about 5 minutes from Paddock to Plate, makes for a really unique experience, because these guys can have really fresh seafood. And at a time right now when we're all watching our footprint and don't want to really bring in and create a lot of produce from around the world, we're really relying heavily on that. So this is an opportunity for other people to come when these chefs come in and do that. So that's why they love coming here. They love seeing what the area has to offer, to learn. And on the wine front, yes, we do. We have, I think there are 230-some contributors coming up. That's chefs, winemakers, media, and producers coming into Noosa for this, which is extraordinary. I don't think anybody, and we wouldn't have those numbers if they didn't feel like they were getting a lot of reward out of it, both personally and corporately. You know, they make a lot of good sales contacts on that stuff. The wine lineup is extraordinary. We've got Laurent Harcourt, who's the principal wine person for Paul Roger, coming over. We've got a list of 20-some winemakers that are physically going to be here pouring wines and talking with them. So it's just an extraordinary lineup this year, and we're so proud of it and really looking forward to coming up. And probably the biggest thing for both punters and these winemakers and chefs is that it's a great big party up here. We don't take ourselves too seriously.
No, that's the thing.
And we have that 10 to 10 rule, Peter, which you know all about.
Yes.
What happens after 10 p.m. and what
before
happens,
10 a.m.?
Until 10 a.m., not one person speaks, including the media.
That's it.
And interestingly enough, over the last 9 years, everybody's pretty much held to that rule.
Which is well, they should, because I've been a part of the festival already and I know how it all happens. Jim, really grateful for your time. It's Noosa has become truly a world-class festival. It happens this May for 5 days, and it's well worth the trip to get up there and be a part of it. I'm really grateful to talk to you today, Jim.
Thank you, Pete, very much for your support.
Good on you, Jim. That's Jim Barrado. He is the Festival Director for the Noosa International Food and Wine Festival, which does kick off in May. We'll be back very shortly with some more festival discussion here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It is 2:15.
Joy 94.9.
Today, Joy is celebrating the anniversary of the day we began full-time broadcasting on the 94.9 frequency in Melbourne. 11 years later, we are loud and a proud voice for the Victorian GLBTI community of Melbourne and beyond. Thanks to all the volunteers, sponsors, members and listeners who have supported the station during the past 19 years and continue to do so, we couldn't do it without you. Catch Joy 94.9 live tomorrow from Carnival Day as we take over the community stage at Speaker's Corner and showcase the best of Midsummer. Live music, interviews, great giveaways and more, plus it's the perfect time to come to our stall and sign up as a member, grab a Joy calendar and collect your free Joy goodie bag. Thanks for supporting Joy 94.9 and we'll see you at Carnival from 11 a.m. tomorrow at Midsummer. We've been to Melbourne talking about a gourmet barbecue festival. We've been to Tasmania talking about festival. We've talked to Noosa International Food and Wine Festival. We move now to Orange in regional New South Wales to talk about Food Week. Happens Friday the 12th to Sunday the 21st of April. Joining me on the phone is Edwina Mitchell, President of Food Week in Orange. Edwina, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Orange is known as the food basket of New South Wales, and there's three shires that take part in Food Week. What's it all about? How does it all happen?
Sort of. Orange is... The food basket of New South Wales was actually coined by one of our local councils, Cabon. Our food of Orange District area, charter area, encompasses, as you said, the three LGA areas of Orange, which is a city, Cabon, which is to the southwest and north of Orange, and Blaney, which is to the south of Orange.
Yep.
And it is some of the prime agricultural area in New South Wales, there's no doubt about that, and a huge diversity. The city of Orange doesn't actually grow much because it's a city. So when we say food of Orange District, it was absolutely obvious that it included those two LGA areas.
Now, one of the key events happening through the festival is the 100 Mile Dinner, which is on the 15th of April. Now, this is going to be... in the very crooked main street of Canoundra?
No, it's not. I'm sorry to correct you.
Oh.
Canoundra, after 4 years, decided that they needed to... look, onwards and upwards. The Balloon Festival happens in Canoundra, and they're a small committee, and I think they sort of really need to focus on the Balloon Festival.
Right.
So our fifth 100-mile dinner is actually going to be held in Molong on the village green.
Oh,
so
that sounds fantastic.
It is. I mean, Molong's one of the older towns in our area, and a beautiful town. And there's some great wines grown in Molong as well. So it actually, it's the home of Cumulus, the home of Princey, mm-hmm. Belgravia wine. So it's quite appropriate that we go for our new venue, we go to Molong, and it gives us a chance too after 4 years to make some changes or change it slightly in new venue, slightly new direction. So so it'll be good.
And it's all using produce that's grown or produced within 100 miles of Orange, of course.
It's the only time during Food Week and in our history of 22 years that we widen our charter area outside of our three LGAs and go to the 100 mile radius or 160 Ks of Orange. The reason we did this is, as many people are aware, approximately 6 or 7 years ago, a Canadian couple decided to... They started this 100-mile diet, and what they wanted to do for a year was only eat and drink produce that came from a radius of where they lived of 100 miles. They were concerned about food miles and sustainability, mm-hmm. all the things that we are all concerned about now. They wrote a book on it. It was very, very successful, and the idea of the 100-mile diet fits in very nicely with our charter area and what we've been doing for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a way to broaden our area a little bit. It includes some other towns that have also got similar, do similar things to Orange, Mudgee, Canoundra, Cowra, Bathurst, and again, all in the central west of New South Wales. So it was a perfect opportunity to do this. It's the only time we do, and it's become, you know, an icon event and yeah, really good.
Edwina Mitchell is my guest. She is the president of Food Week in Orange, and we need to specify that Food of Orange District is the four letters that make up food, not just food. Now, it's a festival to show not just the produce but the chefs and the caterers and the cooks and all of those things that make up you know, the wineries in and around the region, all of those things that make up what is a very unique food producing area of New South Wales.
That's absolutely right. And I mean, not only do we, you know, people forget that there is life over the sandstone curtain in New South Wales. You know, life does go on. It's actually quite a nice life and quite sophisticated, and we actually eat and drink very, very well west of the sandstone curtain. So and we're often, regional areas in Australia are often overlooked for their gourmet, you know, the gourmet end and the high quality end. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be, because we do some really good stuff. We've got some great chefs and cooks and caterers and all those sorts of things. And they do a tremendous job. And I think they're underestimated and undervalued by, you know, the general metropolitan population. We certainly don't underestimate them. It's we're in our 22nd year. I think we get better every year. We have issues, as do lots of voluntary, and where it's still a voluntary committee, finding sponsorship is really hard at this point in time in Australia for anything. You know, we have got a two-speed economy and we're not part of the top speed, and business confidence is very low. On a really bright note, we've had the best season for our fruit industry, as has most of Australia, in 20 years. Some of the cherry orchardists, there were no nasty summer storms, there was no rain damage, there was bucket loads of fruit, fabulous quantity. Anyone who's made a fruit salad this summer will know that all the fruit from Eastern Australia and Western Australia, it's just magnificent.
Yep.
This year. We've been very fortunate.
Edwin, any issues with bushfires in and around the area? I know that there are a lot.
Not in Orange. I'm actually not in Orange at the moment.
We won't tell anybody where you are.
No, that's right. My husband we live actually at Kidal, west of Orange, and he doesn't stray very far from the farm at this time of the year with temperatures over 35 degrees and wind. So we've been quite fortunate that there's nothing at this stage. There are fires to the north of us in Dubbo, and fires to the south around Canberra and Bungendore, but I think they're pretty much under control now.
Excellent. Well, if anybody is listening in those areas, we do, of course, send our thoughts to anybody who's suffering through any sort of natural disaster at this time of year, particularly bushfires in Victoria, Tasmania, New South Wales. Edwina, really grateful for your time. If people want to find out more information, the website?
Our website, www.orangefoodweek.com.au.
And we need to remind people it's a 3.5-4 hour drive, as you say, over the limestone curtain from Sydney through the Blue Mountains.
There is
a daily bus, train and airline services into Orange, so it's very easy to get to, and certainly a great way to go and see some of regional New South Wales and the remarkable produce that is grown in the area. Edwina, thank you for talking to us this afternoon.
Indeed, thank you.
All the best.
Bye.
That's Edwina Mitchell. She is the president of the Food of Orange District Food Festival Week. And look, if I spent all of my time and money going to these food festivals, I'd be very broken, very fat. But there are amazing festivals happening all over Australia throughout this year that are highlighting wonderful produce that we grow, beautiful livestock that we grow, and incredible wines, beers, ciders, and all sorts of things. We were hoping to get to the Adelaide Cellar Door Festival, which also happens in the next coming weeks. I believe that's on in 22nd to 24th of February, and it's a showcase of a majority of South Australia's wines, all at the Adelaide Convention Centre. Well worth getting over to as well if you're planning a trip to Adelaide. And the big one for me, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, the 1st to the 17th of March 2013. An incredible 17 days this year with the theme of Earth. Last year, of course, was fire. The Gourmet Barbecue Festival is part of that Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and you can get all of the details at melbournefoodandwine.com.au. couple of messages, and then we'll welcome the boys from Fender Bender into the studio to deliver their program for you, taking you through until 2 o'clock when Chris and Gordon join you, I think, to continue after there. It may be a new grid, so I may be a little bit wrong. Don't hold me to that. I will bid you my farewell, and I will be back next week with another hour of intriguing food and wine discussion from right here in Melbourne, across Victoria and across Australia. Until then, do keep yourself nice and have a wonderful Midsummer Carnival day tomorrow. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's 4 minutes to two.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.